This is a reading from the Gospel of John, chapter 20, verses 19 to 31. On the evening of that first day of the week, that is the first day of the week that Jesus had risen from the dead, when the disciples were together with the doors locked for fear of the Jewish leaders, Jesus came and stood among them and said, "Peace be with you." After he said this, he showed them his hands and sighed. The disciples were overjoyed when they saw the Lord. Again, Jesus said, "Peace be with you. As the Father has sent me, I am sending you." And with that, he breathed on them and said, "Receive the Holy Spirit. If you forgive anyone his sins, they are forgiven. If you do not forgive them, they are not forgiven." Now Thomas, called Didymus, one of the 12, was not with the disciples when Jesus came. So the other disciples told him, "We have seen the Lord." But he said to them, "Unless I see the marks in his hands and put my finger where the nails were and put my hand into his side, I will not believe it." A week later, his disciples were in the house again, and Thomas was with them. Though the doors were locked, Jesus came and stood among them and said, "Peace be with you." Then he said to Thomas, "Put your finger here, see my hands. Reach out your hand and put it into my side. Stop doubting and believe." Thomas said to him, "My Lord and my God." Then Jesus told him, "Because you have seen me, you have believed. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed." When Jesus then did many other miraculous signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not recorded in this book. But these are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in his name. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
Thanks, Gina. He is risen. Way to go. Brendan, they're quick learners here. You guys are an amazing bunch. Quick learners, way to go. Everyone was talking about it. The whole city of Jerusalem was abuzz with the news. This Jesus that they had crucified on the Friday, who was thoroughly dead on the Friday. This same Jesus now, a few days later, on the Sunday morning, they had said that his tomb was empty. Thomas, one of the disciples, he first learned of the news from his other disciples. These were his closest friends. These were the people that he had spent his life with for at least the past 3 years. And they came to Thomas and they said, "Thomas, we've seen Jesus. We've seen him with our own eyes, Thomas. Thomas, we don't know how to explain it, but Jesus is alive." The disciples, of course, were talking about an experience they had, an experience that would change the course of history forever. The disciples were talking about an experience they had one Sunday evening. It was the Sunday that Jesus rose from the dead. The faithful disciples were gathered in a room. The faithful disciples, that is, except for Thomas. They were gathered in this room, and John, in chapter 20, he tells us that they were behind locked doors because they were afraid. They were afraid because this Jesus, whom they had put all of their hope in, he had been arrested. He had been tried for crimes he did not commit. He had been executed. And so they were afraid. But they were also afraid because this Jesus, whom they put their hope in, he was the one that they thought would come and sort out the mess of their lives and of our world. He was the one they put all of their hope in to bring God's salvation, to restore to the earth a justice and a righteousness that is fitting of God. But this Jesus had been crucified. So these faithful disciples, minus Thomas, they gathered in a room behind locked doors. And as John tells us in John chapter 20, in a moment, Jesus he appears to them in the room. He walks into the room and he greets them. Peace be with you. And so these disciples, when they get the chance, they go to Thomas and they tell him, Thomas, we've seen Jesus. I mean, poor Thomas. Could you imagine what it would have been like for Thomas? I mean, these were his closest friends. They had shared every experience along the way, but this one, Thomas, he had missed out. Thomas had completely missed out. And for some people, this actually evokes a kind of fear. I don't know if you've heard of this, but psychologists of late, they have coined a term about a particular kind of social anxiety that people get. It's called the fear of missing out. Have you heard about this? They call it FOMO. The fear of missing out, right? Perhaps Thomas had a case of FOMO going on here. This is what FOMO is. They talk about this kind of thing. FOMO is a pervasive apprehension that others might be having rewarding experiences from which you are absent. A fear that you're missing out. I mean, imagine with me for a moment. Put yourself in Thomas's shoes. You're sitting at your desk. And you've got your computer in front of you. And your Facebook feed, it begins to erupt with the news. Your friend from down the street, he posts, I totally just saw Jesus on Emmaus Street. You scroll down your news feed a little more, and then you see someone has posted a news article, the 6 best places to see the risen Jesus in Jerusalem, right? And then all of a sudden, your Instagram account, it goes off. Peter has posted a picture of his breakfast, because this is what we do, right? He's posted a picture of his breakfast, and it's the broiled fish he was eating with Jesus by the Sea of Galilee. And then Twitter, well, the resurrection is trending on Twitter. A hashtag, he is risen. Hashtag, I saw him with my own eyes. Hashtag, YOLO is a hoax. I mean, put yourself in Peter's shoes for a moment. You had missed out. And I wonder, what would you have said if you were in that position? What would you have thought? How would you have reacted? I suspect you would have reacted the exact same way Peter did. Thomas did. Unless I see his nail-marked hands, unless I am able to put my finger in the scars, unless I'm able to put my hand on his side, I cannot believe. You see, often we tote Thomas as the doubter. I actually think Thomas was a human being. Yet in the midst of it, Thomas had missed something. Thomas had missed something real. Thomas had missed something life-changing, something world-altering. And it causes me to ask the question, what if I've missed something? What if you have missed something? Perhaps for you, you've dismissed this whole Jesus story as a hoax. It's a made-up story for the superstitious, a crutch for the weak, or as Karl Marx has said, an opiate for the masses. But can I just ask with all honesty, what if you've missed something? And for those of us who have followed Jesus for a while, what if you've missed something too? What if there is more to following Jesus than you're currently experiencing? What if Jesus wants to unleash a power both in you and through you, but you're missing out on it because you don't think it's possible? What if we've missed something? Thomas had. But here's the good news. Jesus came back for Thomas. Look at the details in the story that Gina just read. verse 26, it tells us. A week later, his disciples were in the house again, and Thomas was with them. Though the doors were locked, Jesus came and stood among them and said, "Peace be with you." Do you see what's happening here? We're told it's a week later. A week later from what? Well, it's a week after the first Sunday that the disciples gathered. It's a week later now, and the disciples are gathered again. We're told also in this text that they were in the same house. They were gathered in the same room. And we read that Jesus, he appears in front of them once again, and he greets them the same way. Peace be with you. A week later, the same house, the same room, the same Jesus, the same greeting. The only thing that was different? Thomas. Jesus came back for Thomas. And Jesus comes back for you. He comes back to address his doubt. And notice, that's the first thing that Jesus does. Immediately, he addresses Peter's doubt. He says, "Peace be with you." Then verse 27, "Then he said to Thomas, 'Put your finger here, Thomas. See my hands? Reach out your hand and put it in my side.'" Thomas, it's time to stop doubting and believe. Jesus, he doesn't shame Thomas for having doubts. He doesn't belittle Jesus, or he doesn't belittle Thomas for having questions. But rather, he comes back and he begins to address those questions. That's why Jesus comes back. It's as though Thomas was saying, "Jesus, I need a little bit of help here. This is too much for me." And Jesus came back. And he comes back for you, too. And this is precisely why I believe John included this story in his gospel. See, John, of the four gospel writers, he is the only one who chooses to include this particular story. Why? Well, he tells us why in verse 31. He tells us why he includes any of the stories that he does. John writes this story, verse 31 tells us, "so that you may believe. These things are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in his name." John includes this story because he knows that we have doubts. He knows that we have questions. He knows that there's times when we say, "Jesus, we need a little bit of help." And he knows that Jesus comes back for us. He writes these things so that we might come to faith in the midst of our questions. And Thomas's big question here is the same big question that every single one of us needs to face at one point or another. And Thomas's question is this: is the resurrection of Jesus grounded in reality? Is it real? Was this simply the wishful thinking of his friends, or was this an experience grounded in reality? Did it really happen? It's an important question. But notice how Thomas goes about finding the answer. Thomas sets out a list of criteria. "I cannot believe, I will not believe unless... unless I see the nail-scarred hands, and unless I put my fingers in those scars, and unless I put my hand on his side, unless my criteria is met, I will not believe." I wonder, do you have your own criteria? Unless the heavens part. Unless Jesus appears before me, unless I see a miracle, unless I experience someone raising from the dead, unless science proves without a doubt that someone can actually physically raise from the dead, unless. Do you have your own criteria? We need to see what happens next. Jesus, He comes back for Thomas. Thomas has given his criteria to the disciples. Jesus comes back to Thomas. He greets him. He says, "Peace be with you." Then he invites Thomas to have his criteria met. You see that? We read it in verse 27. "Here, Thomas, come, put your fingers here. Reach into my side." But do you notice what happens? Thomas never touches. He never investigates. The moment that Jesus shows up for Thomas, it's as though his need to touch, his need to probe, his need to investigate, it disappears. You see, what Thomas really needed was an encounter with the living Jesus. It's what any of us really need. And the moment that Jesus appears to Thomas, the moment he makes himself available, his other criteria, they fall away. And here's the point. Sometimes we think we know what we need to believe, but it's not always what we need to know to believe. Sometimes we think we know what the criteria are in order for us to come to genuine faith. But the reality is, God is the one who knows what we need. And what we think we need isn't always what we really need. Sometimes Jesus reveals himself to us in ways that we don't understand. Sometimes Jesus reveals himself to us in ways that we don't expect. And like Thomas, faith comes from a genuine encounter with the living Jesus. Like Thomas, what we all really need is simply an encounter with this living Jesus. And Jesus, he encounters us in these days through his Holy Spirit. And so just as Jesus came back for Thomas, Jesus comes back for us so that we might encounter him, so that we might believe. But how can we really believe in the resurrection? How can we really wrap our mind around something that is formerly unknown to us? I mean, people don't just rise from the dead. How can we even wrap our mind around this concept? Because we've never experienced that kind of thing before. Well, imagine with me for a moment that you grew up in an isolated environment. You can make up whatever you think that is. An isolated environment you grew up in, and you had no concept of conception. That you had no concept of where babies come from. All right, and I'm going to give the PG-13 version. All right, and if you have 13-year-old kids here and you haven't had this talk with them yet, well, you better hurry, because here it comes. Imagine, I see some whispering going on over there. It's good. I'll give you time. All right. Imagine with me, you grew up in an isolated environment and you had no concept of conception. But then I told you a microscopic seed from a man is mixed with a microscopic egg from a woman. And they come together and they form one single cell. And in that moment, a person begins. And that one single cell, it divides into two. And then it divides again into four, over and over again. And 9 months later, a baby with wiggling fingers and wiggling toes is brought into the world. I mean, if you had no concept of this kind of thing, you would hear this story and you would think in your mind, that's unbelievable. It's unbelievable because we have no concept of it. We have no prior experience of it. Unbelievable, we would say, but no less true. And I think the same is true of the resurrection of Jesus. It's unbelievable because we have no prior concept. We can't even wrap our mind around the thought. But it's no less true. You see, there's good reason to believe that Jesus did, in fact, raise from the dead. History has shown us that Jesus was a man who lived in first century Palestine, that he lived, that he died, and that a few days after his death, his tomb was indeed empty. Now, whether you've read the Maclean's magazine from this month or not, I don't know, has anyone seen it? Maclean's magazine wrote this article they do almost every Easter trying to defunct Christianity and Jesus and the resurrection. And this year they said that Jesus was not a historical figure. But the problem with that is that the majority of historical scholars, the vast majority of historical scholars, whether they be Christian scholars, whether they be agnostic scholars, or atheist scholars, the majority of historians assert that Jesus indeed was a man who lived in first century Palestine, that he was crucified in Jerusalem, and shortly after his death, the tomb he was placed in was empty. Now, those historians will disagree as to what that means and how it came about. But history shows us Jesus was a man who lived, who died, and 3 days later, his tomb was empty. We have good historical documents that articulate the fact, and these are reliable documents, as good as any other historical documents, that people in that time, shortly after the grave was empty, they came to believe that Jesus rose from the dead. Not just one. Not just two, but hundreds. Hundreds. Paul, in his letter to the Corinthian church, he says that there are over 500 living in a particular region. And he encouraged people who had questions, because we all have questions, he encouraged them to go and ask. Go and speak to those people who had seen the risen Jesus. It only makes sense. This wasn't some made-up fairy tale. These people weren't inclined to think this kind of thing happened. They came to believe it because they saw the risen Jesus. Now, one of the most compelling pieces of evidence for me that I've enjoyed hearing about is that for figures like Jesus from that day and age, and this day and age for that matter, for figures as prominent as Jesus was, if he were to have died and stayed dead in a grave, often what happened would be that that grave would become a shrine. People would venerate it, they would decorate it, they would put up candles and they would etch in the stone, and it would become a place that people would go to over and over again to honor the one that they loved but had died and had stayed dead. But nowhere in history, nowhere in the documents, nowhere in archaeology has ever a tomb been found like that. Why? Because Jesus had risen from the dead. Even James. James was Jesus' half-brother. And some of you have siblings. I don't know what it would take for you to believe that your sibling was the Son of God or the daughter of God. You know, James is probably the guy who fought the most with Jesus, and, you know, they were brothers, they grew up in the same household. James came to believe that Jesus was the Son of God because he met the resurrected Jesus. There's reason to believe, not some blind faith, but a faith grounded in reason. Thomas is often touted as the doubter, but I would say that Thomas is really a model of faith. He's a model of faith. He's an honest searcher, someone who has honest and real questions, but someone who, as they open themselves to Jesus, they realize that encounter with Jesus is simply what they need. That they don't hold on to the other criteria, things that Jesus doesn't care to answer. And as Thomas, as he asks the question, and as Jesus meets him in that moment, he falls to his knees and he makes the greatest confession in any of the four Gospels. He looks at Jesus and says, "My Lord and my God." Oh, that we would make that claim. Jesus, he leaves us with a challenge. He leaves us with a challenge here, which comes in the form of a blessing. I don't know how he does that. It's amazing. Verse 29, let me read it. "Then Jesus told Thomas, 'Because you have seen me, you have believed. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed.'" He's speaking about us. Blessed are those who have not seen but have believed. Not seen but believed. Therein lies the challenge. Not seen, but believed. Jesus is saying to us, there comes a time where we step to that edge. There comes a time when we step to that edge, and Jesus is saying, you need to take a step forward in faith. There comes a time when we come to the edge of our criteria. We come to the edge of all that God is going to reveal to us. And Jesus says, blessed are those, though they don't see, yet they believe. He's saying sometimes it's time to take a step forward. To take a step forward in faith. To take a step forward into the resurrection life of Jesus. To take a step forward into the whole story, the greater story, the bigger story. In his book, A Grace Revealed, Jerry Sitster, he tells about a great tragedy that happened in his life. It was in 1991, he piled into a minivan with his wife, his four young kids, and his mother. And as they drove down the road, a drunk driver veered from their lane into his and hit them head on. Tragically, it killed his wife, his four-year-old daughter, and his mom. And Jerry writes this book after learning to live life with his three surviving children. And he shares this story about his son, David. I want to read it for you. He writes, "My son, David, is and always has been quiet and reflective. After the accident, he was the least likely to talk about it. But when he chose to, he usually had something significant to say or ask. I had to be ready to respond to him when he sent cues indicating he was ready to talk. Our best conversations happened in the car. One particular conversation has stayed fresh in my memory. David was 8 at the time. We were driving to a soccer match some distance from our home. Typical for these occasions, David was quiet. The car was full of silence. Not a heavy silence, but a liquid silence, as if some question were brewing inside him. Do you think Mom sees us right now? He suddenly asked. I paused to ponder. I don't know, David. I think maybe she does see us. Why do you ask? I don't see how she could, Dad. I thought heaven was full of happiness. How could she bear to see us so sad? And so Jerry, he begins to wonder, he ponders, he thinks, could Linda, his wife, could Linda witness our pain in heaven? How could that be possible? How could she bear it? And then after thinking some more, he responds, I think she does see us. But she sees the whole story, including how it all turns out, which is beautiful to her. It's going to be a good story, David. Here's what we find hard to understand. That it is through death that Jesus calls us into the whole story. It's through the death and resurrection of Jesus that we are invited into the whole story, and it is a beautiful story. And for some of you, for all of us, it's time to take a step forward into the story. And this is what we step forward into. When we believe in Jesus, we are raised from death to life. When we believe in Jesus, we are raised from death to life in every aspect of our living. There are four fundamental parts that go into making you a person who lives. There is our physical living, our emotional living, there is our relational living, and our spiritual living. And as we believe into Jesus, we come to life in each of these areas. In our physical living, death is raised to eternal life with Jesus. In our emotional living, our own self-value, self-worth, it is raised to the status of being called children of God. In our relational living, our dysfunctional relationships, our isolation, it is raised It is raised to relationships that flourish and satisfy. And in our spiritual living, our hostile separation from God, it is raised to an intimate participation with God. The resurrection of Jesus is the power of God to make a human being fully alive. It's time to take a step. Friends, you have not missed the party. Jesus comes back for you. He has what you need in order to believe. Take a step and experience the fullness of life in Christ. He is risen.